Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. I was under the impression that Nell's funeral was going to be, as a lot of funerals lately have been, on News Now, but I couldn't find it there at 1:30. We'll try and find out why, if not, or maybe my link isn't strong enough, why Nell's passing and her funeral is not on RT News Now as advertised. Bernadette Hayden, Bernadette, there's been a lot of talk about the Leaving Cert today. It's not the be-all and end-all and shouldn't be the be-all and end-all of anyone's life. There's too much talk. The GCSEs came out yesterday in the UK and you'd hardly hear it mentioned on radio, let alone television in the UK. But we're obsessed with it here. How are you today, Bernadette?
I'm just wonderful, Joe. I'm sitting here in Newbridge College waiting for your dulcet tones.
Okay, well, it's your dulcet tones that swayed the nation the other day, because you did Irish in your Leaving Cert. You did tell me your age, didn't you?
Yes, I'm an octogenarian plus 3.
Okay, so you don't eat meat. You're an octogenarian. Okay.
I used to eat meat on a Friday Wednesday.
I'm an octogenarian. I only eat meat once every 8 days. Now, what have I to do? You have the envelope in front of you.
Yes, I have. Oh. And I have a good knife here. It's actually a lovely letter opener.
Now, remember, the Leaving Cert should not define your life. Do you hear me? Okay.
Thank you. But I'm sort of, I open it, I'm hoping that I'll encourage some of my contemporaries to get out and do some of these exams.
Yeah.
Because, you know, hope is always, as Emily Dickinson says, it's the thing with feathers that perches on the soul and sings the song without the words and never leaves at all. You can hope for everything. And now, Joe, I've just opened the letter and I'm taking out the page and I'm focusing, and I have a grade 1.
Hey, the top grade.
Yes.
Well done. Well done. Why am I not surprised?
Am
I not surprised? And how did you do in Irish in 1958?
I don't know, but I had to get an Orica to go to training college.
Yeah, okay. Well done.
And I think the training college thing they go to university now.
Okay, so you want to encourage people, not just about the Leaving Cert, but lifelong learning. There's loads, isn't there?
I think, it's great to take up a book. Take up any book. I mean, even an old catalogue or anything, it's amazing. And when you start reading it, I had an aunt who bought catalogues ad infinitum. And she was ad infinitum getting parcels in the post.
And then the other thing I like, well, in terms of, okay, you can do the Open University and there's some of the courses you have to pay for. They also run another facility where you don't have to pay for courses. But what I like about what you've done is you had to discipline yourself to a curriculum. Then you're examined on that. Yeah, okay, that's good.
That's right. Okay. And a friend of mine, Anne Cullen, when I mentioned to her that I thought I'd do this, she post-haste sent me the books. So I had to get my nose down then. But wonderful.
Would you not be entitled from Norma Foley to get the free second level book? She's bringing that, but that's next year, isn't it? It's junior cert at the minute. Now, Bernadette, what next?
What next?
Yes.
Joe, I'll let you know.
Okay.
I'll try this again. I think music, because I have a music school in the car, and math or Irish, because I love the language.
Yeah.
I think it's important for me to be, to know where I am and to pass it on and encourage people to use it. And my mother taught me my Irish, and we had great teachers in the Mercy Nuns and Ennis. And then, you know, it's a wonderful language.
Yeah.
And we had a child with Down syndrome, and he's gone to God. We miss him so much,
mm-hmm.
Stephen Hayden. We had him for 50 years, but he used to use the Gaeilge a bit. And every time, if I was putting my nose into what he was doing,
right.
He'd turn around and he'd say, Gura mi lama, and Gura mi lama was me, meant off with you.
G-R-M-A. Get rid of mammy. Gura mi lama.
Bernard,
that you congratulations, by the way, but two things I want you to do. One, I want you to recite one of your own poems.
Right.
Yes, and then two, I want you to, given your great experience, I want you to try and dilute the burden that so many people, because we're so obsessed in this country about the Leaving Cert, but dilute the burden then for people who might not have got what they thought they were going to get, and it's not to remind them it's not the end of the world. So first of all, what's the name of the poem you've written?
There's no title on it,
okay.
But it is about a racehorse called the Banshee.
Okay.
Right?
Off you go.
And on Vakatu E, my van biog she.
Yeah.
Ho chown le shrown, ho mar le gui. And near on Gurak, on Tirot co fear, a balu, a bula, a torrent gudian. And ní son garach on tuna is on mon, na húshla eich scrada anam na mon. O chucky tu cum came or came, ma lorin down is yoir on kern. Is honig she cum gone in cor came, ma lorin down is lay on kern.
Now, you're going to translate for me a sec, but I heard As Fast as the Wind and the beautiful description of the horse. Can you give us a rough translation of the... by the way, it sounded beautiful, and the beauty of the Irish.
She came from the Curra.
Yes.
She was always doing her best.
Yes.
She would do her best for anyone, and Charlie Swan was only a little boy riding her.
Okay.
And it was the bird catchers in Nace. It was, I think it's now a listed race, but it was the race for the 2-year-olds to win.
Okay.
And Charlie really worked really, he hadn't worked at all, because actually she ran for him. She was quite stubborn. She wouldn't run for every jockey, but she ran for him. But anyway, up from the dip she came, the green and white coming up towards me. And the green and white were my colours, Limerick colours from Castle Connell, County Limerick. And I said, oh, you will come to me, came. You come on to me, step by step, and don't take any odd step. And she didn't, and she came, and she got the cup of the bird catchers, and that's it.
Well done. And,
yeah.
But the Irish, your Irish is the bloss. It's just so gorgeous. So melodic, so beautiful tone and beautiful timbre. Beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you.
So then, now, your words of wisdom from Bernadette about anyone who was disappointed today. They shouldn't be, for a start. But anyway.
No. Nobody should be disappointed. Anybody who sits the Leaving Cert has been brave enough to come through all the discipline of learning their subjects. And what they got probably doesn't reflect at all, if they're disappointed, what's possible for them, because exams can be quite challenging and can block the memory. And so don't worry, Yes, everything is out there for everybody else. And the teachers will help if you want teachers. If the government will help. I'd say there's an avenue to every course, and you must be proud of yourself. You must say, I did really, really well.
Yeah.
And remember what Emily Dickinson says, keep hoping. And there are no words to her song. You put the words yourself to her gift of hope, and keep hoping and you'll get there.
And concentrate. The most important thing in life today is your health, please God.
Oh, yes, that is true.
And I don't just mean your physical health, your mental health as well. That's the most important. It's a milestone, but we make too much out of it in this country, unfortunately, and put too much pressure on young people. Bernadette, I just wonder, you're very wise. Would you come in some Friday and we'll do an agony aunt session with you? Ask Bernadette.
Oh, gosh, Joe.
And people will ring in and say, Bernadette, my husband my husband has run away with the neighbour. And I think he really loves him. What shall I do, Bernadette? dear Bernadette.
Well, I'm facing, here beside me is my husband of 60 years,
wow.
Joe. And we had a wonderful life. We still continue to have a wonderful life.
That's John.
That's John, John C. Hayden.
And yes. When did you tell him we have a wonderful life?
Oh, I sort of...
John, release him.
Hold on.
Bernadette, okay.
Joe.
John, I caught a Cunnus Tatu.
Oh, Tommy, Gamma,
Cunnus Tatu fan. Gamma, her father, Gamma. And I'm even better talking to your wife. She's very wise.
Well, she's here studying her results.
Yeah, well, she couldn't have done better, could she? She couldn't have done better.
Grade 1.
Oh, of course. And where are you going to celebrate?
Well, I have horses to feed, and
okay.
I have cattle to feed.
Okay.
And
more important things.
I'll put them on hold until tomorrow.
Okay.
And we'll have a little celebration.
Now I don't know whether you heard Bernadette there, but basically she said, John, 60 years ago.
Yeah.
When she said 60 years ago when John C. Hayden met Bernadette, he won the Euro Millions. Is that true, John? You won the lottery.
Joe said you won the lottery when you met me. And somebody asked me this morning,
yeah,
where did I meet him?
Yes.
And I said, in a car.
Oh, good luck. too much information. And do you remember the night? Was it the front of the car, the back of the car? How did you meet in the car 60 years ago, Bernadette?
Joe, it was the night of Hurricane Debbie.
Hurricane Bernie.
Hurricane Debbie.
Yes.
You never remember that yourself. You weren't around.
And how did you meet in the car in Hurricane Debbie?
Well, I had just started my teaching career in Staplestown, and a cousin of mine,
yes,
he lived, I stayed with my uncle, one uncle, and my other uncle, his son, Tim Houlihan,
yes,
he said, he's sick of me not going out. And he came over and said, you're going out tonight. So he drove over to his girlfriend's house.
Yes.
And then when they came out the door, out after him came about 7 big Kildare fellas. And this man, John Hayden, sat beside me in the car. See, I must say we were pretty crushed together.
So he had a crush on you from the get-go, Bernadette.
When we got to a tie... The roof was blown off the
Sorry,
ballroom.
when he put his hand on your tie.
No, we went to it.
Oh, he went to it. Okay, sorry, I misheard.
And the roof was blown off the ballroom. and we ended up in Carlo. Anyway, we got home safely, but I accidentally left my purse in his pocket.
Ah, sure, that was deliberate. Will you stop it? Will you stop it?
Everybody says that was deliberate. And then I saw him again, okay. Coming with the purse.
In daylight.
Anyway, and when you saw him,
and when you saw him coming in the purse and coming with the purse in daylight, did your heart skip a beat?
I have to say it. He was tall, dark, and handsome.
Ah.
And as well as that, he played football for Kildare.
Okay. Well done. Well done, Bernadette.
Oh, thank
people love your words of wisdom at the end there for the day that's in it, and
God bless them all.
And to anchor people on the day who may be, they shouldn't be, but they may be disappointed.
No.
And as you say, there's avenues and ways. It's not the be all and end all of anyone's life by any stretch.
Not.
You mentioned your own son, Stephen.
He was a fantastic man. He was born Down syndrome, and he was amazing. He was he was a genius.
Yeah,
he really was. And I think he went to he spent a small while in St. Raphael's, but most of the time at home with his daddy. He loved his daddy.
Yeah.
And he was a great man with horses, and he had winners on the Carla, and bringing them in. And Caroline Sutton.
Okay, there's a line gone. Unfortunately, Bernadette, okay, quick break. We might get Bernie back if we can.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
So, Bernadette, your son Stephen was a gift, and he left.
He was an absolute gift, absolute gift to us, and we loved him. And he was an amazing swimmer as well, Joe.
Wow.
And he'd dive in at one end, and he was like the man from Atlantis. He'd get up at the rise up at the other end and shake his head and do a big splutter, you know.
Okay.
But
and he was well known, I'd say, around the Curragh and Newbridge and Nace.
Everywhere. And he went to the Curragh with John for every meeting, and he carried the colour bag.
Yeah.
And one day, they were halfway to Cork, and Steve says, "Where's the colour bag?"
Okay.
So they had to ring home and tell them to get someone to come quickly with it.
Okay, now, and God rest Stephen. I know he died 7 years ago, and you have three children. Now that you've done so well in the Leaving Cert, Bernadette, can I just a few words of warning? I know you're going out clubbing tonight. Just a few words of warning. You're to wear the when you leave the house, you have to leave the house in the clothes you're going to wear. You're not to do what everyone else does at your age and goes and change into a miniskirt up to you nowhere and a leather jacket. Okay, behave yourself. Right? You're not to drink straight vodka. You're not to get into any shots competition with your mates, and you're to be home before six tomorrow morning.
Thank you,
Joe. Is that
Joe.
Okay?
That's sound advice.
Good Margaret. Good Margaret. Good
Margaret.
Slán.
Great to talk with you. Slán.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Noel Fleming has contacted us. Noel, good afternoon. Can you explain to people, especially from those outside of the capital, where is the complex that we're talking about, Noel?
Yes, Joe, good afternoon. The complex is on Cork Street, at the junction of Ardee Street and Cork Street. It's just before the junction as you're coming down Cork Street.
And,
it's a lovely little complex.
Okay, but the biggest landmark would be the Coombe Hospital, would it? That's what people would know.
That's a little bit up the road.
Okay,
that would be the biggest landmark that would be the same, yeah.
Okay. So what happened?
Right. last year, at the very end of March or the very start of April, a drunken man rambled into Robinson's Court, and there's a lady that we look after called Sarah who lives there.
Okay.
And he walked in on top of her. He was drunk and he had a bag with cans of something in it.
Yeah.
And he demanded money off her. And now, Sarah, although she's nearly 80, she's very sprightly, and she told him to F off and get out.
Fair play.
And her neighbour, a lady who lived just across from her, overheard Sarah shouting. And she came out, and between the two of them, they got him to leave the complex.
Okay.
But in the doing of that, he swung at Sarah with the bag and the cans. Now, he didn't hit her,
right.
But if he had hit her, he'd have killed her.
Yeah, yeah.
And she would have been the fourth person to be murdered in that complex in the last 10 years.
So who lives in that complex primarily, Noel? Is it
people who would be Sarah's age or maybe a little bit younger? They would be older people or people who live on their own. There are a couple of couples that live there. It's like sheltered accommodation. It's run by Dublin City Council, and they have a warden that goes in and talks to the people and
brilliant.
Finds out what
so it is. It is. It is, in one sense, sheltered and run by the city council and for a specific age group and a specific demographic as well. Sorry, specific age group.
Yes.
Where people are in specific circumstances, maybe living on their own or whatever. But apart from that, everything is okay. So you say there have been three murders in that complex.
Three murders in the last 10 years, and Sarah could have been the fourth one. And that's why after that near miss, we had a protest on Cork Street, just outside the complex, to highlight it, that it needed gates. It does not have gates, and it should have gates. Because there are other places on Cork Street that house people who, they'd be, I don't know how you would describe them, but they're all gated communities. They even have people on the door to let you in and let you out and all that. But where these people live, there's just free access into it and free access out of it. A lot of people use it to park cars when they're going to the gym next door.
Okay.
And the problem is, Joe, it's inevitable that somebody else is going to be killed in it because you can just come and go as you please. But after we had the protest, Dublin City Council invited all the tenants down to have a meeting.
Okay.
And Sarah invited me to go as her next of kin.
Okay.
And I went down, and the meeting was very civil, and everybody who wanted to speak had a chance to speak. And they promised that gates would be put up by November of last year.
All right.
And November came and went, and nothing happened. And at the time when we had the protest, Maura Devine, she would have been the Sinn Féin councillor for the area. She would have been very helpful trying to get the gates put up at the time. She got word that the gates would be going up in March then.
Okay. We are where we are today. What do the gates look like now?
There are no gates. They haven't been put up.
Why?
And Joe, what's very...
Why?
Well, you tell me. What's very sickening about this is we recently had an incident over at the Dáil where a van drove into the gates of the Dáil, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Áras an Uachtaráin. And the day after that, there was a big picture in the Irish Times of a load of men now
fixing the gates. I know that. Yeah.
Fixing the gates.
So, but I also when I was told earlier on, there's no gates, and I think there's a statement somewhere from Dublin City Council saying they can't get a design or something. excuse me, but I googled it there at lunchtime. I think I came across 15 companies in Dublin alone that do these electric gates and the fobs and the... It's not actually... It's not putting a man on Elon Musk's head. It's not as... it's or even putting Elon Musk on Mars. It's not as difficult as that. So did they tell you why? And have there been incidents recently?
Yes, yesterday morning. Yeah. A man came into the complex at about 9 o'clock.
Okay.
And he was acting very erratically. And now Sarah has a home help, a wonderful girl, Karen, who comes to her. And when Karen came, it was nearly 10. And that man was in there for that hour. And he was acting very erratically. The people were terrified. Now, Karen rang the emergency button that Sarah has, and the police did come up and take him away.
Okay.
But while he was there, Sarah was terrified, and other people in the complex were terrified to come out.
Dublin City Council, does Dublin City Council say, and apparently there have been loads of other incidents as well, it's crying out for action. Dublin City Council, we've engaged with a Garda Síochána who've now agreed to have a presence around the complex to reassure residents. Is the Garda there now?
Well, I'm not in the complex now, but I can tell you this much. The local guards, the community guards are wonderful.
Yeah, I know.
They
do
ramble in and out, and they do engage with the people.
Okay. They then say, in relation, sorry, I have to read out these statements. In relation to the installation of, I could be replaced by an AI robot. All I do is read out statements. In relation to the installation of gates, we have, unfortunately, and for reasons entirely beyond our control, been unable to source a competent designer for this system to date. A competent designer. Automated. It's not an open and shut case, because as they open automated gate systems are specialist machines that must be designed, installed and maintained to strict standards. We are continuing our efforts to source such a designer to carry out the required design before issuing it to a suitably qualified and competent contractor. So before anything can happen, we have to find this mystery designer. And he has to be, or she has to be, or they has to be a competent. It has to be a competent designer. And I was thinking, would we ask some of the electrical company, like, is it a big job? But then I said, hang on, is an electrical company going to come on and give their name when they might be tendering for a contract from the corporate? That wouldn't get them very far. But if an electrical gate company, anyone, a rep or anyone wants to come on, and you needn't give your name on air, obviously, the name of your company, and tell us, is it rocket science to install? I know it's a complex job. Sorry, I'm not trying to demean the job. But does it take how long? When was it first promised?
8 months ago. In April of last year, in June of last year, up and running by November of last year.
And we're a year later.
That was put, almost a year later. That was put back down till March.
Okay.
And then questions were asked. And there's a question to be asked when the council meets again in September. All the councillors in the area now are up in arms over this. Last Tuesday, I was sitting waiting on the car to be serviced, and I picked up Monday's Irish Times in the garage where I was. And there was an article by a lady talking about gates that people are looking for down near O'Connell Street on a laneway that gets a lot of
Harbour Lane,
social. Now, yesterday morning then on Clare Bourne, I don't know if it was the same reporter, but she, the lady on, talking about the same thing. And when I heard that, I nearly flipped, because here we are. These are old people living on their own for the most part, very frightened. They don't go out in the evening. They keep to themselves for the most part. And they're terrified who's going to come in there. Because the last man that was murdered, he was a beautiful Chinese man, George. And a random fella just walked in off the street and murdered that man with an axe. And only one of the tenants in the place at the time caught him on CCTV. He had his own CCTV in his flat, dropping the axe near the gate. And that's how they were able to get him. And the man has since been charged and he's in jail. I think the poor man had mental health problems. Okay. That's neither here nor there.
Well, still, just briefly now, have the city council said, like, if we put in a fob system and a gate system and a key system and a pad system, not everyone would be happy with that. Is there any dissent? You know, people say, I don't want to get locked out of my own place.
Nobody would be against it. And I know that from the little shop we have on Reed Street, a lot of the home helps come into us. I know a lot of the people that live in the place myself, and they don't have any problem with it. They want to feel safe, Joe, and they don't feel safe.
Okay.
Really and truly.
Maybe. Can some gate company let us know? Is it? Should it take a year and a half? And do I have to get a specific designer?
Joe, wait till I tell you something. There's one block of student accommodation that was built down the Black Pit.
Okay.
And one of the reasons they got planning permission from Dublin City Council was there's a beautiful courtyard inside in the complex.
Yeah.
That they would let the local people go in and sit there and use it in the summer or whatever.
Lovely. Yeah, yeah.
To sit out in the open. 3 or 4 days after that complex was opened, there were gates up on that complex. And they were put up by a company. So it's not rocket science to put gates up.
And Noel, you said that lady put you down as her next of kin. How were you involved in this complex, so to speak? This complex
issue.
Well,
this particular lady is a real character down around here, because everybody knows Sarah.
Okay.
Sarah can't read or write.
Okay.
And if she gets any post, she brings it down to us and we sort it out. I know her for over 40 years and we're very good friends. And she's a wonderful woman, very feisty. Her backstory is very sad, but she's very happy there. And this is what annoyed me more than anything, Joe. When the incident happened, a corporation official, and I happened to come upon him as he was saying it to her, Sarah has an awful fear of being locked up, right?
Okay.
So most of the day, she'd sit with her hall door open. Now, the flats are wonderful, and the horse is like a little doll's house. But it's very warm. In the winter, it's lovely, but in the summer, it can be very hot.
Okay.
So she leaves her door open to get fresh air. And nobody interferes with her at all till this fella arrived in on top of her. But this corporation official, and I happened to come upon him as he was saying it to her, he was blaming her for this fella doing what he done.
Okay.
For having her door open.
You see, and
his attitude was, if the door had been closed, this wouldn't have happened. That's totally irrelevant. Sarah's quite entitled to have her door.
Yeah.
She could have been standing at her door.
And as you know, and it's one of the joys of living outside the capital, but one of the joys people have is, and they do it a lot in Dublin as well, especially when you open your hall door and you put your chair just in the porch, if you're lucky to have one, just outside your hall door, and you sit there and watch the world go by. It's a beautiful form of relaxation.
And especially
you can't do
show.
It.
That's a big thing in the
living. But anyway, it's a great pity if people can't do it anymore. Okay,
and these people, I'm not exaggerating when I say it, they're living in fear.
Yeah, well, that's
absolutely not living in fear, and it's terrible.
Okay. That's not fair. Okay, Noel, good of me, Mahogat, Noel, and we'll as I say, the council say they're waiting. Is there anyone in? There must be someone in Ireland who designs those systems. This mystery man or woman or whatever. See, can we find him, or are they? Gwen, good afternoon. Gwen.
Hi, Joe.
What happened?
Well, nothing in particular. It's just a series of events that has made me feel unable to go into my capital city.
Okay.
And I have no specific incident that happened, but I haven't been into Dublin city for quite a number of years. I was loved going to the theatre, to the concert hall, to the shops.
Yeah, okay.
To walk around my city. I was born and bred in Dublin. I now live in Wicklow. I'm very accessible to Dublin, but I wouldn't dream of going to Dublin city anymore. And that's I just feel that I know it's the capital city, but I do not feel safe at all.
Because you said in your call, I came to live in Wicklow 5 years ago and thought that I would be able to drive up and down and get into Dublin, get the Lewis, get the Dart and enjoy the city. And that's 5 years ago. But you think, well, you're not the only one, you think that the city has become more dangerous and scary.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I have the Lewis near enough to me to drive to.
Okay.
I have the Dart if I don't want to drive all the way to Dublin. I have the 84 bus.
Yeah, great.
I have, I have plenty of accessibility and I can drive my car on the M50. I have lots of family living in Dublin. I have family living in Wicklow. And I'm an older person, but I'm I go out for walks in the countryside with my dog and all that. But I will not go to Dublin, and okay. and it is very, very sad, I think, and very, very unnecessary. Surely, we're a very rich country, and surely, Dublin can be made safe for people to go to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all.
Okay. But I just wonder, is it a perception of Dublin being as bad, or is it the reality?
No, so you hear every day of the week something happening. You know, I have been in Dublin. I've been in Dublin with my family. I still feel unsafe.
Okay.
With younger people accompanying me, I still feel unsafe because it's quite clear that it isn't safe.
Okay, Gwen. Would you come in with friends, even like safety in numbers?
No, I went on the Lewis to go to the Gate Theatre from where I'm living, and I went a year ago with a friend who was visiting me and staying with me for a few days, and we went on the Lewis.
Okay,
and,
brilliant.
From Carrick Mines, and then we went to the Gate, and I couldn't wait to get home. I spent the whole time in the Gate worrying about waiting in Parnell Street. And then when I got on the Lewis, I was very, very conscious of the... it was very full and very antisocial behaviour going on. And when I got to Carrick Mines, I was absolutely shaking.
Okay.
I was so scared, and I drove my car home and I said, well, I won't be doing that again to my friend.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's sad.
That is sad.
Very sad.
Okay,
for a Dubliner and a proud Dubliner.
Yeah.
Married to a proud Dubliner too.
I hope the perception at least can change as soon as possible. Okay, Gwen, go to meet Margaret. Thanks, and I know you're originally from Beaumont in North Dublin. Samantha O'Flanagan, staying in Dublin. Samantha, what happened? I can't believe there is a train station in Ireland. It's not Thomas the Tank Engine or James the Red Engine or Gordon or whatever. There's a train station in Ireland that can only open when the unoccupied shop in front of it is open. Is that correct?
Hiya, Joe. Not quite, kind of. There's a train station in Ireland, in Clongriffin train station. The access to it from Baldoyle is through a stairwell which is owned and controlled by a private developer.
Okay.
So the train station itself can open. It's just that people from Baldoyle can't access it if the shutter is closed.
Yeah, but it's not much use of a train station being open if you can't get into it.
No, exactly. Yeah.
And how do they build it? How do they build it with a shop? I know it's a unit, but how do they build it with this without a gate, without a way in?
Yeah, so the way it's designed, it's a really bizarre design. The train station is like higher up on a higher level. And our entrance from Baldoyle, you need to take this stairwell up to it. It was initially part of a planning development 14 or 15 years ago. The planning permission was given, and the access for the train station was meant to be developed in line with apartment blocks and centre, I suppose. And that was 14, 15 years ago, and we're still waiting for them to start building the site. So the temporary stairwell was put in, as I say, 14 or 15 years ago, and we've just been left with this temporary access.
This temporary stairwell looks like a tower, doesn't it? What, three-storey tower? Okay.
That's exactly. Okay, yeah, and it's then like a metal tower.
Yeah, three metal containers on top of each other. Okay, so you walk up this little alleyway from the Baldoyle side. Obviously, you can't scale the railings, and too dangerous.
Nope.
And illegal. So you walk up this little footpath to these three containers, which contains the stairwell to get you onto the overpass to get you down into the station. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who has the key to those?
It's privately owned, so it's a developer that owns the land. So they have a third party security firm looking after the site, I believe.
Okay. Samantha, is it hit and miss?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a stairwell, and within the stairwell there's a lift, because like I say, it's three stories, corrugated stairs. So there's the stairs and the lift. So more often than not, the lift is completely out of service. So if you are a wheelchair user, if you have mobility issues, if you have a buggy, bike, anything like that, you can't access the train station. At night time, they have started recently shutting off the access at night time, which affects us managing to get to the 24-hour bus service that's also on the other side where the DART station is. Mm-hmm. So they've cut that access off at night now. And then what happened on Wednesday was nobody came to open the access point in the morning. So everybody was getting ready to go to work, going for meetings, you know, whatever, and they couldn't get in. They couldn't get up to the train station because the access point was closed. So,
and their options were, one, their options were not really, run, come down, try and scale that railings, which is spiked anyway, run across the track, take your life in your hands. And what is the other option? Can you drive? So what would you be doing driving around?
I don't think that would be an option. I think, I don't think you'd even be able to scale the railings.
Well,
other option is, yes. I mean, you'd have to add on another 45-minute walk on your journey.
That's
have to walk around to the next train station's Bayside or Hoth Junction or whatever. So you'd have to walk a very long way around Congreffin Station then. Yeah, so it's... I mean, it was very disruptive. I'm part of a residents' association here. We had loads of emails, text messages, even phone calls from residents saying that they were trying to get to work. They couldn't get into work that day. So some of them had to just come back and work from home. Some of them missed meetings.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I say, some of them were just really late. My own husband was late into work
But Samantha, if I was... Okay, I can't get into the station from the Baldoyle side, even though there is an entrance, but it was locked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's locked because Ian Rodern don't own the entrance.
Yeah, so that's a problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I
have to get on in Baldoyle, I'm standing there at the entrance, but the entrance is locked. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to try and walk around to get to the other side of that track, how long would that take me? Where could I cross the track?
Oh, you'd have to go back up through Clongriffin Way, back up onto the main road and through Clongriffin. So you're adding a decent journey on, a decent walk onto your journey there, yeah. Or like I say, go and find one of the other train stations, go over to Hoth Junction or to Bayside, but again, you'd have to make your own way there then. So it really did put a lot of people out. There was a lot of very, very angry people. And it all comes down to the fact that the private developer owns and controls the access to public transport. I don't understand why planning permission is given in this way. It doesn't make any sense. There's no accountability. There's nobody, you know, taking control of the situation.
And what would Ian Road Éireann say? Would Ian Road Éireann say, well, you can get into the station from the other side? How do you get to the other side?
They normally just say if you put in a complaint to them about it at any point, they normally just say, well, it's nothing to do with us because we don't own the access point. So in fairness, this time they did say, oh, we've reached out to the landowners to try and get this sorted for you. But normally they just say, well, we don't own it, so it's nothing to do with us.
But they've reached out.
They said this time they reached out. I think they got a lot of complaints, so it was very hard to ignore.
But who,
on Wednesday.
Who built the overpass down to the other, over the two, from one platform to another? Who built the overpass?
I'm not fully sure how it was built 16 years ago.
But That would have
the
to
other
be...
side to Clongriffin is owned by Dublin City Council, and the side down to Baldoyle is owned by Fingal County Council. So you have this kind of confusing things as well, is that one side of the access to the train station is a Dublin City Council, and the other side, our side, is a Fingal County Council. So that kind of adds more confusion to the mix.
The station with no entrance, but it is on it is on the on all the maps, Clongriffin.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And the only,
it's a really busy station.
Well, the only the only reason you'd go to your side and the side that's you don't know where it's going to be. The only reason is go if you were a train spotter, you could stand there all day, but you couldn't get over to the other side.
I know. And they sold all these houses on the basis that we live just minutes from train station. You know, it's meant to be perfect area for commuters, for for working working couples. You know.
Well, you see, you know, when I actually made it my business a few months ago to drive out that way, because I've lost track of the city of all the different new estates. And someone that, because my granny used to live beside Kilbarrick Station up to...
Oh, yeah.
She died at 96 and she used to dart every single day. But my memory is that there was a little cul-de-sac of a roundabout you go up to. But are there any street lamps?
There's a few.
Okay.
There definitely needs to be a few more added in, though. It's very dark going down there in the winter.
I just
very
wonder, could we get a zip line up there for you every morning?
I think we could do something like that, to be honest.
We get a ladder up to a ladder halfway up the lamppost, and we zip wire people one by one over the railings, over the moving darts, and land them on the others. We land them in Dublin City. Okay, but it's not funny. Can you imagine?
We've been campaigning for about 2 years, ourselves, the Resident Association, on this to try and get something sorted. And we actually had the Minister for Transport out to the station in January there.
Okay.
And he assured us it was going to get sorted and, you know, we'd have some progress by the end of summer. But we're at the end of summer now and we haven't had any updates.
Okay.
We're still sitting waiting.
Okay. And Samantha, the serious thing is people have enough pressure going to work, children into creche or whatever, packing, running, trying to get home, and to go down to your nearest railway station and discover that you can't get in. It is a station. It is a real station. And we're not talking Platform 9A in Harry Potter.
No,
but
it's a real station.
It is a real station. And yet we can't.
It's an absolutely fantastic station. They spent millions building it a few years ago. It's relatively new in the grand scheme of things.
But unless,
it's an absolutely brilliant station. But, I mean, it's only brilliant if you can access it.
Yeah, unless you're
access it, what use is it?
Unless you're an accomplished zipliner, abseiler or mountaineer, you can't get in from your side.
Yeah, it's absolutely mad. I mean, we've had parents getting in touch with us saying that they've missed hospital appointments for their children.
Yeah.
We have a school in our estate here, a brand new school, and families have to come over from the Clongriffin side to get to school. And, you know, if the access point is shut or if the lift isn't working.
Well, Samantha, well done. You're chairperson of, what's it called, Myrtle the Coast Residents Association.
What does
Myrtle the Coast mean?
That's the name of the estate, That's where the access point is as well,
There's an estate called Myrtle the Coast.
Yeah, the estate's called the Coast, and it's the coast is split up into three or four different areas.
Yeah.
So our section is called Myrtle. Yeah, Myrtle the Coast.
And why is your section called Myrtle? Why not the Jew?
I'm
afraid to ask. What are the other sections called? There's Myrtle, there's Thomas the Tank Engine, there's James the Red Engine, there's and so there's Myrtle the Coast. What are the other estates called?
There's one beside us called Red Arches.
Red Arches.
Silver Banks. Yeah, Myrtle, Red Arches, Silver Banks. So that all makes up the coast estate.
I understand.
So that's where we are, and then that's where the access point is.
But do we know who Myrtle is? Myrtle.
I'm sure there's something behind it.
Okay. Well, Samantha, well done for campaigning on this. Fair play to you now, seriously.
Thanks very much. Thanks for highlighting it on here.
Well, you're the one who highlighted it, and it's a story in itself, this train station that people can't get into. Okay, good to meet you, Margaret. Samantha O'Flanagan.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Another day and another victim of a bully dog attack, and another death, as you heard, in the UK in the last 24 hours. An attack here in Ireland 5 days ago, and the number of people killed in the last few years in the UK alone by these bully dogs is 73. Sinead, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. You're in city centre Dublin, in the Summerhill area. Tell us your worry about these dogs.
Yeah, look, as you just said there, Joe, I was prompted to kind of email you just following the horrible news of that poor infant in County Kerry mm-hmm. over the last few days. As a parent of young children myself, like, it's a grave concern that I have. And I think people really, unless they're in this area on a day-to-day basis, they've no real realisation of the extent of these types of dogs in the area. Like, not a day goes past where I don't kind of either, you know, every day or every second day mm-hmm. come in contact with one of these dogs. Most of the time, you know, they don't have muzzles on. Sometimes they're off the leash. So really, I suppose, sorry, I have the baby here with me now.
Okay.
You can pause in the background. I suppose the point that I'm trying to make is, again, just to highlight the extent of these dogs in the area. And also, whilst I welcome, you know, the new change in legislation, which I think is coming into effect in October under this new two-phase plan. So the first phase, I think, means that, you know, there'll be a ban on the sale and breeding of these dogs. But then the second phase is that owners, current owners of the dogs, will need to have certificates of exemption.
Yeah, that's from next year.
Deadline. Yeah. Strict rules that they must adhere to, such as, you know, keeping them in a muzzle. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm not an expert on it myself, but, you know, there's specific criteria.
But at the minute, the XL bully, this is a statement from the department, the XL bully is already covered by the restricted breeds list in Ireland, which means it must be muzzled at all times and kept on a strong lead while in public.
Exactly.
But who's enforcing it?
That's my concern. I think it's great that they're changing the legislation, but unless it's enforced on the ground on a day-to-day
They don't have to change any legislation. The legislation already deems the XL bully is a restricted breed, which means it must be muzzled and kept on a strong lead while in public. Now, have you ever seen a dog war? Have you ever seen a dog war? There are for every three TDs in Ireland, there's one dog warden, so to speak. There's 166 TDs. There's 74 dog wardens. There are 32 local authority areas. Work it out. There's basically on average two dog wardens in two dog wardens in Dublin City, two dog wardens in Fingal, two dog wardens in South Dublin, two dog wardens in Limerick, Cork, Wexford. It's crazy. Crazy. So
yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Did you say as well in your initial email that you bring your buggy with you as protection?
Yeah, it just comes back to the broader issue that we're all kind of blue in the face talking about it at this stage, and that is the issue of antisocial behaviour in general in the inner city in Dublin. And, you know, I was just chatting to my husband about it the other day. I mean, we can't go from A to B, you know, bring our child to creche without the fear of A, XL bullies, B, mm-hmm. illegal drug dealing and drug taking in broad daylight, and then C, use of scramblers illegally on footpaths. And the thing is, Joe, it's the same people on the same streets, same individuals. So I just don't understand why there is no increase in Garda presence on these streets. Like, I'm in walking distance from three Garda stations, you know, Fitzgibbon Street, Door Street and Mountjoy, probably more actually. And, you know, we just don't have any Garda presence on the streets. Come down on a match day and you'll see, you know, 12 or 13 people at the end of our street. But it's just, I just think it's bound for failure, this new legislation, unless it's enforced on the ground, and that means increased Garda presence and increased dog wardens as well.
Okay, Mara Rua's and Gory, say this 51551 joe@rt.ie. Mara Rua, your point, please.
Well, I'm not in favour of the ban, Joe, because bans have never worked anywhere. So why would a ban work in Ireland, where we've minimum enforcement at the best of times? If we could get enforcement of the actual legislation we have at the moment, that would go a long way towards resolving the problem.
So you're saying the whole thing of the statement I have from the Department of Rural and Community Development is just a PR stunt, is it? They couldn't. Are you saying they shouldn't? They should enforce the legislation.
Enforce the legislation we have now. That'll be a good start. And like that lady, the previous speaker made
Sinead,
she made the point, and you said the same yourself. It's lack of enforcement on all aspects of dog control, and then there's the antisocial element as well. So if there was proper enforcement, we wouldn't have these problems. Like, no dog should be loose around the place of any breed.
So what sanction? What sanction should there be if there's someone, which according to Sinead, and I don't doubt for one single minute, there are fellas, invariably, walking around with XL bullies, not unmuzzled.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about the owners, unmuzzled and not on the lead. What are the sanctions if they're breaking the law like that?
Well, there's no sanctions when there's no enforcement. But if the dog is every dog has to be under control in a public place, and restricted breeds have to have a muzzle and be on a short lead. But, you know, that's the theory. The practice is a whole different thing. But there's no evidence whatsoever that you're more in danger from a bully breed than you are from another breed. That's something the media keep saying, that the breed is dangerous.
But where are these stories coming from?
Oh,
Generated by you? By you?
By the media, Joe. And then the politicians get onto it as well, and they're making out that it's a huge problem. Like, it is a problem. There's no two ways about it. And there have been some terrible incidents.
Yeah.
But 80 to 90% of dog attacks actually happen in the home by a dog known to the people. So the stranger danger of the bull breed is very much exaggerated. It's not so much outdoors. Most of these unfortunate attacks happen in the home. So we shouldn't be bringing in breed bans now that we know don't work. We should be much more proactive on doing things that make it safe for people and dogs to live together. You know, that's what they've done in other countries. They've rescinded breed bans because they were unworkable, and yet Ireland turns around and brings in a breed ban.
Okay.
These
names mean anything to you, Maura? Esther Martin, 68. Ian Langley, 54. Ian Price, 52. Anne Dunn, 65. Bella Ray Birch, 17 months old. Jack Lees, 10 years old. Okay, they're just some of the over 70 people killed by XL bullies in the UK.
Yeah,
not other dogs. Yeah. So don't give me this nonsense about this is generated by the media. These are real people who are really dead, and they're 100% dead.
And it's all
preventable. The newspaper I'm reading this from, and I read it last night. I referred to it, yes. They didn't make up these names.
No, they didn't. No. No, and those attacks are all preventable, which is the saddest part of it. And I would say, how many of those attacks happened outside the home? You see, when these things happen, they need to be investigated, and they're not being forensically investigated. And
but these are XL bullies, these dogs.
Yeah, yeah,
these
but there's
dogs.
Other dogs kill as well.
Yeah,
you know,
but not this is what the government inquiry in the UK when they dive down into the stats. Okay.
Yeah.
It said that the breed, the XL bully, has been and I quote, and I'm not making this up, by the way.
No.
Said the breed had been disproportionately involved in deaths recorded since 2021.
Yep, that's because the XL bullies are very popular at the moment. If you go back to statistics before that,
what
you'll
is
see
nice.
Rottweilers.
By the way, I love dogs myself. Mm-hmm. What is nice about an XL bully? Enlighten me. Are they cuddly?
What's nice about
them?
Oh, everything. Oh, they're very affectionate. They're very affectionate, provided you have a nice socialised dog. But they're lovely dogs, Joe. Most bull breeds are so affectionate. They're high energy. They're very amusing. They're goofballs.
They're very
strong.
They are very strong, very powerful. The breed, according to the British government, the breed has been disproportionately involved in deaths recorded since 2021.
Yeah, because they're fashionable at the moment. But the XL bully is not a breed. It's
why
a
are
type
they,
of dog.
Okay, Maura, help me. Help me here. Why are they Why are they fashionable?
Because dogs go in fashions. You know, one time it was German Shepherds were fashionable, then it was Rottweilers are fashionable, then it was Dobermans, then it was the Belgian Malinois, and at the moment the XL Bully are fashionable. But it's something that goes all the time. We see it in Rescue World the whole time.
Okay.
Dogs are popular for a while, and then, you know, the fashion wanes. you know, they're moving on to other breeds now because you're bringing in an XL bully. You know, it just doesn't work.
Apart from high, well, there's one especially high profile court case in the last year where the Alexandro in Wexford was attacked by that. Have you come across anyone, like, have we ever, you know, the way the Gardaí rightly say, the bank holiday weekend, we're going to have more checkpoints, we're going to have more breathalyzer drug tests or whatever. Have the Gardaí ever said, well, I suppose they shouldn't say it in advance, but have the Gardaí ever said, we're going to have Operation Bulldog, where we're going to concentrate on stopping people who have restricted breeds that do not have muzzles or leads?
I've never seen Gardaí active in dog control. Like, I know they're authorised officers under the welfare legislation, but they don't actually carry out dog control unless there's a specific incident. Dog control usually falls under the dog wardens. And, like, there's only one dog warden for the entire area of Wexford, you know, so he's going to be pretty limited in what he can do, you know, and he does his best.
Okay. I know it's complicated. Mm-hmm. And then what happens to dogs when they are seized, and what pound do they go to, and where do they end up?
And yeah.
Given the way we treat greyhounds, who are regarded as after their business life is over, so to speak, their racing life is over.
Okay.
It's a complicated issue, I know.
Yes, but, Joe. Simple solutions to complex problems are rarely.
Yeah. Would you ever say to somebody who was walking you would know the restricted breeds? Would you ever check someone and say, listen, you should have a muzzle on him?
God, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. Providing the dog's behaving itself, because if the dog is behaving itself, the dog isn't a problem. You know,
okay,
if there's somebody, it doesn't matter what breed it is, and the dog's misbehaving. Okay. Sure, I'll say it. Yeah.
Well, we have a list of restricted breeds.
We do. Yeah.
You're saying that's wrong as well.
Oh, it doesn't work. Like,
I don't forget about it. No, I'm parked that for a minute.
Yeah.
Not to ignore it. But do you think the list of restricted breeds is wrong?
Oh, absolutely. It's entirely random, Joe. It's entirely random.
Okay.
Where's the Irish Wolfhound or the Great Dane? You know, and we don't have it in the north of Ireland. There's no restricted breeds. There's a prohibition on certain breeds, four breeds. But, like, and they don't have any increased amount of dog attacks up there. So it's a random list. It's not reflective of the reality, you know.
Okay. Maru, go to Minamaga. That's Maru and Gori. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
In praise of Bernadette Martina.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. You love the whole idea of mature students. You went back to education at the young age, at a very young
39,
age.
39, yeah.
That's young. That's
39.
Young.
39, I went back to do my junior leaving cert at 16 because I didn't have any support going through the leaving cert. So
okay.
I did the vote, and then I went on to adult education, and I done 4, 5, and 6 as well. So I'm actually heading back now to do another level 5 in early education and care.
Well done.
For children of 0 to 6 years old. So I absolutely love education.
Brilliant. And Martina, can you remember the decision to go back? Was that nerve-wracking? Even the first day you went back?
Not a bit. I love education because I love to keep busy and keep the mind going and see how far I can actually go, if you know what I mean.
There's a
level that I have to stop, but I am an SNA on a bus escort for the last year and a half now, so I'm back on the bus on Monday for the new school tour.
Well done. Well done.
I'm very happy.
Keep going, Martina. Well done. And Martina's very happy. And Helen Colgan, thanks, Martina. Helen Colgan is very happy. Helen, the restaurant's called Chili Banana. We all think that gift vouchers should never expire because the cash you handed over for them never expired. What happened in your case, Helen, 18 years later?
Hiya, Joe. We got a beautiful gift of a wedding present from Chili Banana, and I found it the other day, and it really highlights the ripple effect of your show. Mm-hmm. When Sean Curry's voucher of 25 years was honoured, I said, you know what, I'll give them a little message. So I emailed Chili Banana, and they said they'd honoured the voucher.
Well done.
18 years since we're married, and Chili Banana in Drumcondra. So, it was just lovely. We went, and it was so funny because we got to bring our kids, Leah and Scott, with my husband, Barry. So that was like really, really lovely.
Well, remember, there was a campaign mainly on this programme a number of years ago about vouchers having these expiry dates, even though your cash that you handed in didn't have an expiry date. And the government said they'd move, and then the department came in saying, no, there cannot be expiry date. Under 5 years. Well, it should be under 50 years or 100 years or whatever. But anyway, because your money is your money. But anyway, fair play to Chili Banana. They didn't quibble. Apparently, somebody phoned in to say, when I mentioned this yesterday, Arnott's honoured a gift voucher 20 years or more. But anyway, that's the legislation. By the way, was the food any good, Helen?
Oh, the food was amazing.
All of us
enjoyed the food. And just thanks to the friends who got it for us. John and Denise Connell.
And how are they doing 18 years later?
Well, it's funny. We rang John. We had lost touch. Hadn't no mobile number. And because of this, I said, you know what? Let's try find his number. He's a granddad and has 4 grandkids. So
brilliant.
John and Denise Connell.
Oh, brilliant. Give them a voucher. Yeah. God, they need to get out more. Okay. Helen, good to meet them all. Good news story. I meant to say this earlier. Over the weekend, there's the Ukulele Festival. It's taking place in Dunleary. Over the full weekend. And the main concert event on Sunday is in the People's Park in Dunleary. National and international ukulele acts taking part, and a free entry. And according to our contact, Declan Callis, who's a very accomplished ukulele player, if that's not an oxymoron, it's going to be a fantastic weekend at the Ukahooly and the Ukulele Festival in Dunleary. James Feeney on sound. Shane Galvin is our broadcast coordinator. Producer Tara Lockridge. Grant, series producer Nettie. You're going to Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end of season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers, and more. In store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.